Coming up on the Star Wars Report, we're going to celebrate the 40th anniversary of Star Wars. And then we're going to talk about new comics, what inspired Rogue One, and take a look at some Han Solo pictures from the set. Punch it, Chewie! Welcome, everyone, to the Star Wars Report. I'm going to try this one more time because Riley and Mark are not here. And I'm getting over my cold so I can actually perform better for you. I can talk better and more clearly. But I can't do it alone. So I brought the most PC guys I could find out in the Star Wars universe to join us for this week's episode. And that is Steve Glosson. Hello, Steve.
Hello, Bruce.
How you doing?
I'm well. Thank you for having me on this show. And we're going to try not to ruin things while Riley's away. Actually, what I'd like to do is, you know how with OCD people, it's always fun to like turn their pencils weird, you know, just to make them mad. I would like to come in here and basically disorganize Riley's desk and completely. So when he comes back, he's like, what have you done to my show?
So this whole show could be a train wreck by the end of this, right?
It's just the fact that you have me on this show, we're already starting to drift off the rails, sir.
Well, to help save things, then we have Michael Morris here too.
Oh yeah, because he's going to save things.
Yep, that's what I'm known for. But you said PC. I'm more of a Mac guy.
Oh, is that what you have right now? You're on a Mac.
No, actually, I'm on a PC. I lied.
I'm more of a Big Mac guy. You know what I'm saying?
Hey, you know, they've got the Mac Junior, the Big Mac, and what's the Grand Mac? I think is what's they got different sizes of Big Macs now at McDonald's.
Right. Well, I think that was a limited time thing, right?
I don't know.
But like, what they did is I think they pulled the bun out and did like a single, the middle bun, I mean, and did a single patty on a Big Mac, because it used to be two all beef patties, but I think the Junior Mac is one all beef patty, and I think the Grand Mac, and I think that's right, is like four patties on that bad boy.
Well, I don't know what that has to do with Star Wars, but since you mentioned Big Mac, I had to go there because I love McDonald's.
Yeah, hey, who doesn't? McDonald's is an American institution that we should all love and cherish. We act like we're all against it nowadays because of all that it's done to our arteries. But at the end of the day, if you don't like McDonald's, I question your patriotism and I question your sanity. I'm not saying eat McDonald's every meal, but I am saying there's sometimes when you want something that only McDonald's will satisfy, that nothing else will satisfy but McDonald's.
Like the French fries. I love the French fries at McDonald's. My oldest daughter says they're the most disgusting French fries out there, which I'm going to disown her for that because those fries are awesome. Don't you guys think? Michael, do you like the fries there?
Yeah. I do like the French fries.
And Michael, do you like my posters behind me, my Star Wars posters?
I like them for the most part.
What does that mean?
We talked about beforehand that Anakin in the Revenge of the Sith reminds me of David Bowie, and it's distracting.
David Bowie?
David Bowie and Labyrinth, yeah.
The Labyrinth poster. So you have David Bowie at the Labyrinth poster in the same like position and look like Anakin has in the Revenge of the Sith poster, right? That's what you're saying to me.
Yeah, like I think he even has like the little glowy orb or something, right? Right where the lightsabers are clashing.
Yes.
It's kind of eerie, actually.
Do you think, now, who was the artist for the Revenge of the Sith poster? Michael?
Oh, I don't know.
As I focus on speaking to you.
Wasn't it Drew Struzan?
Was it Drew Struzan?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, I thought he was retired by then and everyone was just ripping him off.
I think they ripped him off later.
I say ripping off. You know what? I'm tired of people using rip off when what they really mean is paying homage or being inspired by it. Because there's no, listen, no one did movie posters better than Drew Struzan. And so why would you not try to mimic or, you know, his style? Why would you not try to emulate him? Not necessarily imitate, but emulate.
Okay.
Yeah, it is Struzan. All right. It was Drew Struzan that did it.
So he ripped himself off.
Well, I wonder if he did the Labyrinth poster. That old Labyrinth poster may have been, you know.
It kind of looks like it.
Labyrinth. Let's see here. All right, now I'm seeing is some stuff from Mondo.
I see somebody saying Tom Covis or Arvis. Yeah. They couldn't read the signature on it, but
well, to be fair, that Labyrinth poster looks like every other poster from the 80s. You know, I mean, this was in the 80s. That was how you did it. You had people really try to craft a poster so that you could tell what was in that movie, or that would make you ask questions rather about what that's movie. Because when you're looking at Labyrinth here, it's like, I don't know what any of this is, but it is all intriguing and I want to be a part of it. And it's the same way with Struzan. Struzan tried to get all the different characters Struzan had his tricks, you know. He would do the thing where, you know, the Goonies thing where you've got all of them hanging down off of something, you know, and that was kind of mimicked a little bit in Police Academy 4, Citizens on Patrol. you know, it really was.
Classic. Oh, a classic movie.
Yeah. By the way, remember the train wreck we talked about? We're there.
We're there.
No. This is the educate section.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, we're educating, and maybe we'll inspire you to be an artist so that one day you can create movie posters that will cause people to look and say, this is amazing.
We are here to inspire and educate our listeners, and I do appreciate you guys doing that for us. I mean, we're already starting off great.
I'm going to work on the entertaining part, so.
Okay. Yeah, you do need a little work on how to entertain people. We'll get you to that before the train wreck actually happens, right?
Oh, it's happened, Bruce.
It's already happened?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, then I'm going to just wish Star Wars a happy 40th birthday, because Thursday, May 25th, is the official birthday of Star Wars. That's the day that Star Wars A New Hope, before it was called A New Hope, that's when it came out in theaters, 1977, on May 25th. So happy birthday, Star Wars. Did you guys know that this Thursday was the official day?
Yes, because I'm a good fan.
I was going to say, are you really asking that question right now?
I'm asking that question.
I don't mean to come on your show and like get on to you for the questions you're asking, but come on. Yeah, in fact, I say that May 25th is the actual Star Wars Day. May the 4th is a fun pun, but May 25th is Star Wars Day in my heart and mind, because that is the anniversary day of the whole thing, of when the world was introduced to this thing that here some 40 years later we're still talking about. So, yeah, I think it's fantastic that it's been that long. And I was there. You know what? I always say, people talk about the dark times, and I guess I remember, you know, people not really caring about Star Wars, but I never stopped. Like, I never stopped having Star Wars around me, whether it was a poster on the wall or a calendar of some sort, you know, because there were little things they would do here and there to continue to market Star Wars throughout those latter half of the 80s. And then, man, when Timothy Zahn's book hit, Heir to the Empire, it was like, for people like me, you know, the geek side of things, and you guys were probably there as well, all the little rumblings started happening, and all the, you know, like you could just feel a tremor in the force, so to speak, even though, you know, there was no internet, but you just felt the love just rise up, because you couldn't go to a bookstore without seeing these Timothy Zahn books. And, you know, number one, you know, New York Times bestseller. And so, yeah, I think it's just, you know, it's crazy to think that I don't know that there's any other franchise that has successfully navigated the waters of pop culture the way that Star Wars has. Many have tried, and most have failed. You know, even with something like a Star Trek, which people always want to bring up the Trek, I look at that and I'm like, sure, Star Trek is fine. That's fine if you like that. You can like the lesser of the two Star franchises. But Star Trek has constantly struggled in every incarnation since, you know, really since the Next Generation. And on the big screen, as far as the movie screens go, you know, they've been very hit or miss, and that's being kind. A lot of people complaining about the trailer that's been dropped, the little teaser for what's happening on CBS Access.
No, there's a few comments that are negative, but most of them are positive about that.
Really? Because what I'm seeing is a bunch of people like, oh, look, it's Jakku. Oh, wait, no, that's Star. That's
well, that's because that's your friends. Those are your friends you're only reading.
Well, I was about to say, I really thought it was awesome that they had two characters in their Rey cosplay. I thought that they did a really good job.
You know what? I promised myself I was not going to bring up Star Trek on the show. And right away, we're like, we're not even 10 minutes in, Steve, and you brought up Star Trek, and then that gets Michael going, and you're, this is the train wreck right here.
Yeah, I know.
Bruce gets really...
I know what I've been doing. I've been doing this for 10. I've been doing this for 10 years now. I know how to make it. Listen, I know how to knock a pot off course.
We just met. This isn't fair.
Sorry, Bruce. Well, I feel like I know you.
Well,
you know,
this is the second time we met, so that doesn't. It's still early. Right. You need to be nicer.
Oh, okay. Is that all right? Well, you're inspiring me to be nice now.
Well, I want you. I also want you to be honest and real.
Okay. Well, I'm being really honest right now and saying Star Trek sucks.
Thank you for listening to the Star Wars Report.
Let the record show I didn't say that.
I'm the Ann Coulter of Star Wars fandom.
Hey, did you know it's Star Wars' birthday this week?
Oh, really?
It is.
Really? Yeah, and how many people celebrate Star Trek's birthday?
Hey, so The Empire Strikes Back, that came out in May, too.
Right, it sure did, of 1980. May 21st of 1980, The Empire Strikes Back was released. One of the few times in cinematic history where the sequel was much stronger than, by a lot of people's opinions, much stronger than the original. However, you can't have The Empire Strikes Back without Star Wars. You just can't do it. And so I think it's fine that it's people's favorite, but to look and, you know, I think sometimes New Hope gets overlooked in people's lists. I almost feel like it should sit out on a pedestal all its own, because it is the moment. It's the touchstone in history that began this whole thing and gave us The Empire Strikes Back, as well as Return of the Jedi. Now, Return of the Jedi actually dropped on May 25th, the release date of A New Hope back in the day.
So, see, here's the thing. I see May the 4th as like the Black Friday to... May 25th's Christmas.
Oh, okay.
That's how I...
Oh, yeah.
That's how I work it out.
So on May 3rd, you're eating turkey, and then the next day, it's like Black Friday, you go out shopping on May the 4th.
Yes, that's exactly what I meant.
That's what I thought. That's what I thought. Hey, do you know what? Each prequel movie came out in May for Star Wars also.
They sure did. May 19th was The Phantom Menace of 1999. That was the day.
Did you say 1999?
I sure did.
What is that? I never heard anybody say 1999.
Oh, you haven't heard? Oh, yeah.
I don't listen to a show. Come on.
That's what very, very dapper gentlemen say.
Yeah. Oh, okay. 1999. And then in Alt 2 was Attack of the Clones on May 16th, which was a fun era of time. I feel like Attack of the Clones, I still maintain that I think it's maybe the weakest of the Star Wars movies.
Oh, yeah, because Michael loves it.
I love Attack of the Clones.
But then The Force Awakens came out, and so I'm still kind of torn. I will say this, that Attack of the Clones, from the time that those doors open on Geonosis to the end of the movie, it is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
I do think it's underrated by Star Wars fans. There's just a lot of threads that needed to be tied up in the television show and the Clone Wars that I feel like, I feel like Lucas opened himself up too many questions to have to answer with one more movie between Clones and Sith. And then Sith came out on May 19th of 2005. And I love Revenge of the Sith, and I think I defy people who talk about Hayden's wooden acting, because when you listen to him talk, and I've said this for years, I've been banging this drum for years, that when you listen to Hayden talk, if you take and put his lines into, if you've got some type of audio editing equipment, and then you just pitch it down, don't slow it down, but pitch it down, and put a few electronical sounds on it, you're going to see that he was going for the cadence of Vader in the way that he would deliver his lines. And I thought he did a really good job. The final moments, the final battle, everything that's going on. I mean, literally the battle for the Senate, the battle for democracy taking place in the Senate between Yoda and the Emperor. and the battle for love and friendship and for light taking place, you know, in the lava rivers of Mustafar is just, it's an amazing, amazing film. And I think all of the prequels get a bad rap from people. I think that there was a huge vocal minority that ranted and raved and yelled against these things for a long time. But I'm telling you, 18 years later, The Phantom Menace holds up. And I'm a prequel defender to the day I die.
Yeah. I don't know what an electronical is, but I love the Attack of the Clones.
What is it that you love about Attack of the Clones?
Okay. Jango Fett, Count Dooku, the Geonosis battle, getting to see the purple lightsaber for the first time. I mean, I know that sounds silly now, but at the time, that was awesome. Kit Fisto is great.
He's smart.
I love the Jedi Starfighter because it's different, but it's kind of reminiscent of the like a Star Destroyer. So that was kind of cool.
We're starting with the wedgie shape with this. The wedge shape is what we're starting with here. This is kind of the birth of that.
And then the clones, in general, that was really cool because it's sort of like I've heard people complain. They're like, oh, it should have been Attack of the Droids because the clones were good guys. I'm like, that's the twist, dummy. And so that was kind of neat. And then I also
But the clones actually end up being the bad guys.
Well, they're not bad guys. They were just misunderstood. But I also like when Jango and Obi-Wan get in the fist fight in the rain. That's fun.
Yeah.
And then when he follows him and then he drops the seismic bomb and he makes that boong.
I love
noise.
That.
That is the best sound in all of Star Wars. And I've said this so many times, and even Aaron Goins was like, what? He's like, no. I'm like, no, I mean this seriously. My favorite Star Wars line is the I don't like sand line.
Oh, my gosh. I'm with you on that. I mean, I don't love that line because I think it's the best line, but it's just the most fun line. It comes up almost every day in my life. Either I say it or, like today, my kids said it in the car.
Yeah, it's pretty, and not just like I said, because it's like, oh, it's so dumb that, you know, it's funny or whatever. But I'm like, no, I like it because it's kind of like the Tashi Station to pick up power converters thing. You know, like I feel like in his mind, he's like, idiot, God, you know, like right. Like he knows that he's trying to impress Padme. And he's like, I have no skills with women.
You know, I don't want to make this I agree with you because it's awkward moment because I don't know if he's ever like hit on a woman or has dated in his life, but he's very awkward on it. But I have to say that I do like Attack of the Clones, but I have a painful memory about it.
Ooh, also, the double lightsabers. You were asking me earlier what my favorite parts were.
Oh, the double.
There's that.
Yes.
Yeah, was cool.
So this is the most painful movie I ever saw because I was so excited to see it, and I didn't realize ahead of time I drank too much beverage, not alcohol, but I just like whatever, and I got in the movie and I had to pee so bad I struggled through that movie because I was not going to leave in the middle of the movie. The first time watching a Star Wars movie, I'm not going to leave in the middle, and I had to sit through the entire end credits too. I can't leave then either, but I remember when those credits ended, I bolted and I ran to the bathroom, and that was the most painful movie I ever saw.
The first time we see Yoda fight with the lightsabers in Attack of the Clones, I'm not saying the Attack of the Clones is a bad movie. I'm saying from a storytelling standpoint, a lot of the little things along the way, to me, there were too many loose ends that had we not gotten the Clone Wars television series, you know, that would not necessarily have been tied up. And I feel like that's one of those unfortunate things. I feel like Star Wars does a great job when it answers questions as it asks questions. You know, as it gives you answers, it just kind of unfolds more questions. But in this sense, it was a little too much. It was a little too many questions that just kind of got laid out there that never quite got resolved. If all you ever did was see the movies. So, but I don't take that as I don't like Attack of the Clones. I'm not crapping on it when I say it's
sounds weird. Sounds like I you don't like Attack of the
Clones. Oh, and I wasn't crapping on it either. I just had to pee. So
there's a train wreck right there.
Wow.
Any because this really is the 40th anniversary of A New Hope and not Attack of the Clones, what is your fondest memory of the first time you saw A New Hope? Michael. Because you
I don't remember. Wait, I was so little.
How old were you?
I don't even know. Because that's the thing. Like, I saw it at my babysitter's, and there's really nothing that, like, I could kind of go back and date when I saw it, you know? Like I don't have any clue. And my parents, you know, if I was like, I saw Star Wars today, they're like, okay, that's great. You know, they weren't like, oh, this is something that we're going to put in his baby book. They're just like, yeah, whatever. It's a movie. You know, like, that's just, my parents weren't really nerds like us. So I don't know. I was young. he likes to say that he doesn't go for all that. He likes to stay in real life.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And then, well, he says that while we're at his wrestling promotion.
I was going to say, isn't he a wrestling promoter?
Yeah. So, yeah, he gets a good little chuckle out of doing that to me.
Now, let me, how old are you, Michael, if I may ask?
I will be 30 next month.
Nice. All right. So Star Wars A New Hope, you didn't really have a chance to watch it in the movie theater until 97, right?
That is correct.
So you would have been, what, 10?
That sounds about right.
Okay. I was born on January 25th, 1977, so everyone can send cards and gifts as they feel so led. And so I was 4 months old when Star Wars hit theaters. I had an older brother who absolutely fell in love with it, as all kids his age did. And I just grew up loving Star Wars right along with him until he died. And I just kind of carried that flame. I had, as a three-year-old kid, Empire Strikes Back trading cards that I just carried with me wherever I went. And I guess I would have been 5 years old, maybe, when they showed it on CBS for the first time. It was a big deal about showing it on CBS. And I would have been maybe it was after that they did. I don't know, but there was a CBS showing. But I also know there was a birthday party where my mom rented Star Wars. It was the first time you could rent it on videotape. And it was back in the day before video rentals were just common. And so she had to put down like $100 deposit on this thing to rent it, you know, that she would get back upon return. That's how serious they were about videotape rentals back then. This is when videotapes weighed, you know, 15 pounds. They were like these, it was this amazing new technology. And we had it, we showed it at my birthday party. You know, a couple of guys and myself were just sitting around watching. So, oh, I loved it so much. And I always remember being confused growing up, just watching it on TV. And then we recorded it off of TV. And so that's what I would watch. And then finally, there was a free weekend of the Disney Channel, like in 87, 88. And this is when you paid for the Disney Channel, and it was like a premium channel. And they were showing Star Wars. I'm like, oh, my gosh, it won't have commercials. And so I was able to record it without commercials. And for a while, that was it. And then when I got my own walking around money, when I got a job, I was like, I've got to buy Star Wars. And so I bought the trilogy on VHS for myself. And it wasn't until I'm sitting in a theater in 1997, seeing it on the big screen for the first time, the Star Wars A New Hope, that I'm sitting there. And when Luke says, there's sand people, all right, I can see one of them now, that I finally saw a sand person. I finally saw what he was talking about. Because in the pan and scan of VHS, they never scanned over to show you that, yep, there's a sand person right there.
Yeah, that always drove me crazy.
And and that was also the moment I had in my life, the revelation of widescreen is better.
Yeah. And same thing with the space troopers as well.
Yes, right? They're right down there at the bottom of the Death Star entrance when they're getting onto the hangar. When they're being sucked into the hangar, the Millennium Falcon, that is. So, yeah. But look, it's always been, like I said, it's always been with me. And so, you know, I track Star Wars' age by my age because we're the same age, me and old Star Wars.
Wow, this is interesting. So you were born in 77. And Michael, then you were born in 87, right?
That is correct.
Bruce, okay. Are you about to tell us you were born in 97?
No. But similar, okay, this is, I hate saying this. I was born in 67.
Are you you crapping?
No. I told you, I'm not crapping anything. So I was born in 67. You're born in 77. Michael's born in 87. We're decades apart, exactly.
Wow, that's right.
I'm turning 50 this year.
Wow, 1960 and 7. So, Bruce, then let me ask you this. You were 10 years old or close to 10 when Star Wars hits theaters.
That is correct.
I don't want to take Scott Rifen's gimmick, but real quick, because I can't fathom childhood without Star Wars. I just can't imagine it. What in the world did you play with before Star Wars? What was your thing?
Well, first of all, when it came to like TV shows and movies, I mean, I was more into $6 Million Man. So I had the $6 Million Man doll and the Bigfoot and the Oscar Goldman. So those were the toys that I probably played with the most. When I was younger, it was more like the Fisher-Price little people, that kind of stuff.
Well, that's everybody.
But yeah. But when
Star Wars obviously scratched an itch that you had as a child, you know, but leading up to that, there had to be something that you were super into. I'm assuming maybe not. Maybe kids weren't super into anything before
I would not say I was super into anything. I mean, my favorite things would have been, as I said, the $6 Million Man and also Super Friends. That was like my cartoon.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I was into, but it wasn't like, oh, I'm collecting a lot of things and there wasn't like a fandom. Star Wars, that took it to a whole new level. That was the first thing that I could say that, like, I am into this. Like, I'm a huge fan.
And you know what's sad about the Super Friends thing is it wasn't even before Star Wars, you didn't even have Challenge of the Super Friends yet. So there weren't like actual supervillains. They were just always fighting off some alien menace or, you know, putting up with Marvin and Wendy's stupidity.
Right. And Wonder Dog and all that. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't. Yeah. But that was just, you know, those were just the things that I liked to watch and I was into. Yeah. But it wasn't even close to what Star Wars was like. I mean,
So what was your first time seeing Star Wars then? Now, see, Bruce, now you have piqued my interest.
Oh, wow. I'm glad I finally got your interest on
something. I have a two-part question. And the first part is, tell me about your first time. Will you please tell me about your first time seeing Star Wars? And I have a follow-up.
Okay, my first time seeing Star Wars, my parents went out on a date. And the next morning, they came home, and I was talking to them. I said, what did you guys do last night? And I said, what movie did you see? And they said, we saw this movie called Star Wars. And I had never heard of it. Because you have to think, it's summertime. So I'm not at school. I'm not hearing kids talking about it. So I had never heard of Star Wars. And my dad says, oh, it's a movie that's got this gold man in it. Like, he's a robot golden man. He's like, I think you would like it. It takes place in space.
That's what captured your dad's imagination with C-3PO.
Exactly. And I just thought it sounded really weird. I was like, a gold man? Okay. And by this time, really all I ever saw was G movies. I mean, it was just Disney movies and like Willy Wonka stuff. Like that was the only movies I ever saw in the theater. So he's telling me about this movie and it's PG, and I'm like, am I old enough to see PG? Because all I've ever seen is G-rated Disney movies. So he took me, and I'll never forget, he was reading the crawl to me as if I couldn't read it. Of course I could, I was 9. So, of course, I was blown away. It's just like everybody else's story that you've heard about, you know, when the opening crawl comes up in the ships and, you know, you're just wow and oh, my gosh. And I mean, I was just totally blown away, and to the point we got into the car to leave and he's driving around the parking lot going, phew, 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 phew. And I was like, oh, this is embarrassing. So that was when I first saw it. And I went home and told my brother, who's 2.5 years younger, about it. And then he wanted to see it. So we went back again.
Nice. So now, You fell in love with it immediately, though.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It was, I never seen anything like it before. Because like I said, think about the Disney movies. I'm not talking just the cartoons, but the old Pete's Dragon and the Shaggy Dog, the Shaggy DA. It was like it wasn't like great special effects and they were goofy. This seemed real. Like, I was like, this feels like a real place. Like, I can't believe this actually exists.
So my follow-up question is, why then would you continue to like Star Trek?
I didn't. I hated Star Trek. I hated Star Trek until about the time I was in college. And then I had a friend.
So it was the liberal hippie college crap.
No. It was a friend of mine. She used to come over to my house some nights on Fridays at midnight. They would play Star Trek, the old series. And she wanted to come over so we could make fun of it. So it was almost like a Mystery Science 3000. We would just sit there and just rip on it the whole time. So, but then I started realizing this isn't too bad. So there you go.
No, it actually is.
Yeah, it's not great, man.
So tell real quick, at least about the my favorite one, Bruce, is your first time seeing The Empire Strikes Back.
The beginning of it?
Yeah.
Okay, so now The Empire Strikes Back comes out, and it's all advertised as The Empire Strikes Back. So I sit in the theater, the movie starts, a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. And then the music comes up with the Star Wars logo, and I'm like, oh my gosh, they're playing the wrong movie. I was like, and I remember in that short period of time thinking, okay, that's fine, because I can watch the original before I go to the other theater to watch The Empire Strikes Back later. And then the crawl comes, I was like, oh, it's okay.
Oh, that's great. And there's like what? So there's 4 seconds of panic there for you.
Absolutely. I'll never forget that panic. So that maybe that was my most painful Star Wars experience.
Oh, that's amazing. I think, but see what that shows is, see, we're so used to in 2010 and 7, we're so used to that formula of the movies coming on that way. And that the whole saga is Star Wars. But with The Empire Strikes Back, if you're thinking everything was marketed, The Empire Strikes Back, that logo. And yes, Star Wars was there in the piping around the logo for Empire Strikes Back. But yeah, just the idea of sitting there for the first time and not really having, because there's only been one movie to establish that visual language. And then there it is again, the same thing you already saw. It's like, wait a minute. what bill of sale have I been sold? Oh, that's great. That is a fantastic. And then just the relief. That's a great story. The relief when you see episode 5, The Empire Strikes Back.
Well, but then I was confused too, because why did it say episode 5? This is the second movie.
Yep.
And then that confused me. And then I thought, well, it's a V, so maybe it's supposed to be a 2, like when you hold up your fingers.
Oh, like Star Trek. Nice.
Yeah.
The mind of a child. I love it though, because that's the thing that we all dealt with early on, is like, now wait a minute, because I remember there was a time when I sat down and I thought, where did 1, 2, and 3 go? And I had to actually go and ask my sister. I think I asked my sister the dumb questions, like, so where are 1, 2, and 3? And she's like, he didn't make 1, 2, and 3, they just made 4. I'm like, wait, what do you mean they just made 4? And like right up, I struggled with this up until they released a movie called Leonard 13.
Yes.
with former American treasure Bill Cosby. And I was like, well, where's Leonard 1 through 12?
It was a buddy of mine who actually lives down near Scott Rifen, actually, but when he went to go see Big Hero 6, he's like, well, I'm going to go see Big Hero 6, but I hope I don't get too lost. I haven't seen 1 through 5.
Yes. See, that's the same thing. Thank God that I was mature and didn't realize that, you know, and knew that Big Hero 6 was the name of the team and not the idea of a sixth movie. But yeah, dude, I think that's a great, man, Bruce, that's a great story. You should be on My Star Wars Story with Scott Rifen.
Oh, we've talked about doing it for the last couple of years, just haven't done it yet.
Yeah, well, he's so backlogged. All of his interviews are still from before episode 7 came out, and we're getting ready to go into 9 in about 7 months. So
yeah, we had discussed right before episode 7. Yeah, right before episode 7 came out, we discussed doing it. And he said, you know what, let's wait till episode 7 comes out and get your reaction to it. And we hadn't got to it yet, and I was like, well, I'm not going to do that now because it's been out for a while. So, yeah, so that there, you got a preview of my Star Wars story right there.
We have something to report.
Come closer, I have good news.
Data brought to us by the Bothan spies.
We can send a clear transmission.
There it is. Listen, listen.
Okay, so.
In the news today, Star Trek still sucks.
It's not that bad. It could be Babylon 5.
Hey, the last
Galactica.
The last Star Trek movie I saw in the theater was Star Trek Beyond, and guess who was with me? Michael Morris.
That's true. The Kelvin timeline doesn't count. those are actually fun.
Well, how about this? How about what J.J. Abrams and company should have done with the first Star Trek was just do a hard reboot and none of this mess of, we're going to play with the time streams and the time travel. That's just dumb. That was scared of fans is what that was.
Yeah, I agree. I'm 100% agree. I would have been fine with a total reboot. Didn't have to say it's a different timeline or anything like that, but
I also want to say this. I love how stressed out Riley Blanton is right now. Listen to this. I know that this is happening in the future, but he is so amazingly stressed out right now. He's like, why are they, what has Steve done to my show?
Well, see, that's what I don't understand. You know, he just went through all this school and his, you know, ROTC and joining the Air Force, all this. I mean, he's had a stressful couple months, both he and Bethany. And so now they're on vacation to relax. And I thought, yeah, but you put the show in my hands. I mean, if you're trying to relieve stress, you're just coming back to it when he listens to the show. And that's why I had you and Michael on to help derail and make a mess of this.
Oh, so you're saying this is your master plan?
Yes.
Bruce is like, I never wanted to host.
And I think Mark's available. I think he's just making up that he's out camping.
Mark doesn't like me.
No, that's not true.
Yeah, Mark doesn't like me.
You don't like him.
Oh, I forgot. Okay.
That's not true either. I don't know. I don't know what's going on with you and Mark. We'll have to resolve that on another show.
I love Mark Herleman.
Well, why does he not like you?
I don't know.
Okay.
You'll have to talk to him about that.
Who's Matt Rushing?
Wait, no, we're not going to get him Matt Rushing.
Who's Matt Rushing?
Who is Matt Rushing?
You know who Matt Rushing is because I pulled him up on my phone live and you said hi to him. You just couldn't hear him.
I don't remember that.
Okay, well, that's not part of the news. The news is that we have a new Cassian comic coming out with him and K2SO. It's a comic when they first meet. And that, yes, it's a special issue. I think it's just a one-time issue. It's an issue that comes out in August by Marvel.
Is this what Star Wars fandom has been clamoring for?
Yeah.
Ever since the Red Arm, C-3PO Red Arm issue.
Oh, my gosh. Mm-hmm. And Cassian met K2. This is going to be amazing.
No, wait a second. You have not wondered how K2SO ended up with Cassian. You never wondered that when you watched the movie.
Here's what I assumed. I assumed that they captured him, reprogrammed him, and Cassian just kind of stuck with him, or he stuck with Cassian.
Well, maybe the you're end. Wrong. You may be wrong.
You may be right. I may be crazy, but it just may be a lunatic you're looking for, Bruce.
And that's why I have you on the show.
I'm glad I wasn't the only one with that in my head. But yeah, I liked K2SO. He was one of the things that were pretty good from Rogue One. So maybe if they can capture that in the writing, then it'll at least be fun.
But they won't because he's meeting him for the first time. Well, so they're going to be enemy mind with Cassian and K2, and Cassian's finally going to get in there and reprogram him, and it'd be like, oh, now I'm a smart aleck droid.
I bet that happens toward the beginning. It's going to be like their first adventure.
Or he'll be like, and there'll be some line in there like, I think you'll be the death of me, Cassian.
It's a pretty good line.
Mm-hmm. It is, yeah.
It is if it's Obi-Wan telling it to Anakin. I don't think...
So, Steve, tell us why you don't like Star Wars anymore.
I love Star Wars. But I will tell you this, that I think in this age of Disney trying to get back their $4 billion, that all the books, all the comics that are coming out, it's just too much. And so it goes back to the problem with the expanded universe once it got so bloated. Is it's like every little detail and every little piece of minutia has to be explained, or a story has to be told dealing with it. And I would rather see Cassian and K2 on some mission rather than here's how they met. Like, just do a mission.
Well, I don't know if this is just a how they met. I think it's part of the story, but I'm sure they're on a mission. It's a 40-page issue, so there's a lot to fill in there.
Listen, they'll stretch out a stupid story into 40 pages. All you have to do is do a bunch of splash pages. I just can't see where I look. It's fine. I'm sure it'll be wonderful. I'm so excited about this. I can't
see for myself. It could be worse. They could make Cassian a part of Hydra.
No, it's going to be K2 as a baby, and Cassian raises him. And
what? I don't think that's how droids work.
Oh, okay. Well, neither did I. But when we read this 40-page one-shot by Dwayne Swierczynski with art by Fernando Blanco, we're going to find out, sure enough.
Yes, we are. And we'll bring you back so we can discuss it and talk about the whole issue with you.
I doubt I read it.
Well, what about this other one? We have a new miniseries coming out also in August about Mace Windu. And this takes place right after Attack of the Clones at the start of the Clone Wars. Is there interest in reading this? I think it's, what, 5 issues? Something like that. Yeah, 5-issue miniseries. And I like the cover, by the way. It's Mace Windu pushing the droids, the battle droids, off. And he's got his purple lightsaber. There you go.
This one I am excited about. And mostly because of all of the clamor about Samuel L. Jackson being like, oh, Jedi have fallen from great heights and blah, 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 blah. And so I wonder if this isn't sort of like a primer or maybe like a test bed for Lucasfilm to be like, well, let's just see if there's interest in him. And then we may see him show up in like Rebels or something like that.
Oh, I doubt we'll see him show up in Rebels.
But whatever the next thing's
going to be. Whatever the next thing is. Yeah, here's the thing. I think it depends on how you write Mace Windu. If they write Mace Windu like Samuel L. Jackson, then we've got a problem. And I think a lot of people got a little frustrated with Mace in the movies, not just because he was always against everybody, but because there was no real, like, Sam Jacksonism to him. Like, he didn't all of a sudden just get mad and bust, you know, break out and, you know, and call the Emperor MF and all this good stuff. and there is a temptation to try to make him a little too much Sam Jackson. But Mace Windu is very cold in a way and calculating. And though he does get a line into Dooku, you know, this party's over, he's not the funny Jedi. You know, he's not Obi-Wan. He's not someone who's going to, you know, kind of relish this adventure and excitement. Not that Obi-Wan did, but, you know, Obi-Wan took to it pretty well. You know, he and Anakin had a good rapport back and forth with each other and that sort of thing. Mace is very stoic. That's probably the word I was looking for, not cold and calculating, but he's very stoic. And if we can see that from him in this and kind of get into that, you know, Shatterpoint, I remember reading that book and I don't really remember it all that well, except that I just kind of remember being frustrated that it seemed like nothing ever happened with Mace, you know, and he kept struggling over seeing all the shatter points. And I'm like, okay, great. You know, and so hopefully, you know, something will happen. I love this era and I love delving into this era. So,
yeah, I recently finished reading Shatterpoint just a few weeks ago. And I thought I agree with what you said there, Steve. I thought, though, the character sounded very much like Samuel L. Jackson in that book. Like, because there isn't a whole lot to go with from just watching the movies, because he doesn't have a lot of lines or a huge part in it. So I think they wrote to more of the actor than maybe so the character. So I'd be curious to see what they do in this comic, especially since we've had the character more often in the Clone Wars, this TV series.
Am I wrong in remembering that book as being like really bleak?
Yeah, no, that's right.
Okay.
Yeah, it's very dark.
Yeah. I mean, this is a cool image. I tell you what the image of the cover brings to mind is the Tartakovsky, the Gendy series, the micro series, where the Mace Windu episode of that, you know, where he just is a one-man wrecking machine when it comes to all these super battle droids at that, which, you know, they always said that's more of a fantasized version of what Jedi can do. You know, it's almost like you're seeing it through the eyes of that little boy who's watching up on the hill. But I like that this, you know, all pushing back all these battle droids, and the perspective makes it seem like there are just hundreds of them. It could just be, you know, a dozen, or half a dozen even. But just the perspective looks really cool, and it brings back, it evokes those memories of that micro series.
So it sounds like you're going to read this comic series.
I doubt it.
Okay.
I don't have money to spend on comics right now.
Okay, well, so, okay, next thing we have in the news coming from StarWars.com, they interviewed Pablo Hidalgo about how Lucasfilm found inspiration for Rogue One. And in traditional Star Wars fashion, other movies and history inspired the movie. So one of the things is, you know, we're talking about the development of the Death Star in Rogue One, and there's scientists behind it. Well, just like the development of the atomic weaponry by scientists involved in the Manhattan Project. And so Pablo Hidalgo said, quote, "In developing Galen Erso, a scientist who made a weapon that would ultimately be capable of unimaginable destruction, we looked at scientist and leader of the Manhattan Project, J. Robert Oppenheimer, as a source of inspiration." So his character was a source of inspiration from Oppenheimer, which makes sense because he developed the atomic bomb, the atomic weapon. And Hidalgo also says about John Knoll, who was the visual effects supervisor, that he was the very first story treatment for Rogue One, and it was titled, he titled it Destroyer of Worlds, which is from the Hindu scripture. Oppenheimer used it to describe his reaction to nuclear weapons development. Oppenheimer had said, "I have become death, the destroyer of worlds." And that's very similar to Galen Erso, who later says, "We call it the Death Star. There is no better name."
Did Oppenheimer also send his daughter on a suicide mission?
I don't know. I haven't read that in history. I didn't do really well in social studies when I was in school.
Yeah, it's a neat article. There's a lot of different things they pulled for inspiration for Rogue One, from history and from other movies and that sort of thing. I would check it out at StarWars.com. Pablo, whenever he's forthcoming with information, it's usually pretty good when he's not being a smart aleck on Twitter. Which I like Pablo, don't get me wrong. I love that he's a smart aleck on Twitter. But, I would be too if everyone was always asking me, "Hey, is this canon? Hey, man. Hey, is this canon? What about the Spider-Man 2? Is that canon?"
How would they be asking that?
I don't know. People ask stupid questions of people sometimes.
Well, the comics are canon, the ones that we were talking about earlier.
The new ones are, right, mm-hmm. But I like he references Guns of the Navarone, you know, and that's the thing is I think Rogue One, and I've said this to several people, Rogue One for me, really, I enjoy more than I enjoyed The Force Awakens. It felt more like some of the old school Star Wars. It felt kind of like a Western. It had that feel of a, you know, it wasn't so much a heist movie as a shootout in a lot of ways once you get right down to it. It was like a Western, just like Star Wars was, a Western set in space. And, and unfortunately our heroes all bite it at the end. But, man, I really dig that movie. I've said from the time they leave Yavin 4 to go to Scarif until the end of the movie, it's some of the best Star Wars that's there.
Yeah, and it took a lot of inspiration from World War II movies and movies in the 60s, like Where Eagles Dare, which I've never seen, but according to the article, there's Clint Eastwood's character, Lieutenant Schaefer. It's like Deanna Luna's character, Cassian Endor. Very similar situations where also Cassian conceals his orders to assassinate Galen comes from, it's reminiscent of Richard Burton's character, Major Smith, in this movie, Where Eagles Dare. So I think, you know, what's cool about Star Wars is when you hear about the inspiration from different movies, it can make you maybe want to go back and watch movies you've never seen. And then you find where that inspiration comes from. And you start to discover some of the classic movies from way back when, before any of us were born.
But that's the George Lucas way of making Star Wars, right? I mean, that's how he used to do this. And when you go back and watch like the making of Star Wars, some of those old things, and I remember they would show the dogfight footage from different war movies and that sort of thing. And that's what Lucas had put in temporarily into the X-Wing shots before they were done to kind of show people what he was trying to go for. And it's that same idea, you know, the Flash Gordon serials and the old Buck Rogers stuff from way back in the day that he took his inspiration from all kinds of things, from the Westerns, from the samurai movies. That's where Lucas took his inspiration from. And so when people do that with Star Wars today, it feels like the Lucas way of making Star Wars, where you pick and choose from things that have stood the test of time, from themes and from concepts from other movies that have inspired you as a filmmaker or as an artist, and you try to put those into the Star Wars framework, it makes it that much richer, and I think it touches something in what Star Wars originally was, which is that callback. And it's very, at the very basic surface of Star Wars, it's just a callback to the old serials of the back in the day, when you would go to the matinee and you may catch chapter 10 of 12 and never saw chapters 4, 5, and 6. You might have saw chapter 2, but you just couldn't go to the movie all the time and catch them, or maybe your movie theater didn't get them all, or that sort of thing. And that's what Star Wars really evokes in its very base, basic level. And so to hear that they were pulling this kind of stuff is really cool. And I think it's one of the reasons, an underlying reason, that maybe on a subconscious level, that Rogue One to me stands out a little bit more than The Force Awakens.
Okay, I'll agree with you on that. One of the things I thought about when they said they were going to make new Star Wars movies is I knew exactly what you were saying, is that George would get inspiration from other movies, and he would pull from different things and put it into Star Wars. I didn't want new Star Wars movies being made as borrowing from existing Star Wars and playing off existing Star Wars. I wanted it to expand out and look at other genre movies, other older movies that were made, and get inspiration from them, just like Lucas did. I think, and I love The Force Awakens, but I feel The Force Awakens borrows and gets inspiration from the previous Star Wars movies, where Rogue One, even though it's a prequel to A New Hope, and in its style and looking at the different sets and the clothing and the machinery, but I think it borrows a lot from old World War II movies, more so than The Force Awakens borrows from other things.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? The Force Awakens really was inspired by Star Wars, where Star Wars was inspired by so many other things. And I think that goes back to some of people's issues with the prequels. By the time that The Phantom Menace had rolled around, there were 7 years of expanded universe material that people have been sinking their teeth into and digging into, and they had their idea of what Star Wars was supposed to be. But the thing with the expanded universe is it all came from Star Wars. It was all inspired by Star Wars. So when you get to The Phantom Menace, and Lucas is going back to this initially being inspired by these serials, but also myth and telling a grander story than just some adventure or some, focusing in on just this one character, or focusing in on the one character, people thought they could tell the story better or wanted a different story than what Lucas had in his mind. And I think it comes from spending almost a decade of having Star Wars stories given to us that were inspired by Star Wars, period, that cribbed, if you will, from Star Wars and not much else. And the new era of the expanded universe, or on the tail end of the expanded universe, you take a story like Kenobi by John Jackson Miller, which is superior expanded universe material. And it really does say, well, we're going to be a Western on Tatooine. And it really works to that, on that end. It's not quite Unforgiven, but it almost kind of is, where this Jedi doesn't want to be a Jedi, but he's got to step in and help people anyway, and that sort of thing. And so, yeah, I think you're right. I think that when you look at The Force Awakens, that Abrams and company were completely inspired by Star Wars. And so that's why I think some of the designs and some of the planet elements and some of the aliens felt a little less inspired than stuff that George Lucas would have overseen and accepted.
Well, and I think they were playing it safe too, because this is the relaunch, in a sense, of Star Wars, at least under the Disney banner, and I think they really had to test the waters and not try to stray too far. And I'm hoping we see the confidence that, okay, we can push the envelope. We've learned from Rogue One, and now we can push the envelope in The Last Jedi and the new Han Solo movie, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, but I think also the spirit of Star Wars is taking a risk, and that's something that, again, on a subconscious level, and I'm not taking The Force Awakens to task. I enjoy it, but I can't be dishonest. I have to be honest, right? About my feelings in that when I sit and really think about it critically, that it does seem that when you look at the, as I said, the elements of the aliens and the planets and the, and even some of the ship designs for the new ships, it's like, when they get off of the when they get off the X-wing and TIE fighter stuff, and what they did with the TIE fighter is like, well, let's just flip the color scheme. Okay, great, fantastic. I'm not opposed to having TIE fighters in that movie. And I was fantastic to see them back. I love the X-wings, and you know the fact that we've seen them move forward a little bit. But then when everything else that gets away from the designs we'd seen in the original trilogy, the transport ship, the Resistance transport ship, oh, this is a box flying through space. There's nothing interesting about it. Remember the original Rebel transport that looked, you know, it had that, it was a Mon Calamari design, basically, we find out in the expanded universe. And it's in it, and it's pod shaped, and it's strange. It has a, it has a weird curvature and organic feel to it. It's very simple and elegant, though. And it's like, but it also looks like junk. And it's just like, oh, so here's a box that just landed. Okay, great. Can't wait to put this together with my Lego set. You know, oh, I built a box. Hey, guys, I built a box. Come look at this box I built out of gray bricks. It's amazing. I got the Princess Leia minifig, though. And so, yeah, I mean, maybe I'm going a little too far, but yeah, hopefully it's entertaining. That's what I want to do.
Well, I think Michael, you like that ship, right?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Defend yourself.
Well, because the thing is, it's supposed to be reminiscent of the, like the boats that they had from World War II going into Normandy.
I'm not talking about the First Order transport.
Oh, you're talking about the other one. I'm sorry.
I'm talking about the thing Leia landed on.
I like that one too, because you know what that is, right? It's just a fat B-wing.
It's
like
a box.
It's a fat B-wing.
No.
Look at it again. No, no, like legitimately, it's made out of B-wing parts.
You're going to make me pull up the Force.
Like, that's the lore.
That's whose lore?
The Pablo Hidalgo, sir.
Laura Santeca.
It's basically like a sort of kit-bashed B-wing that they're like, well, we don't have any money. Let's just take this B-wing.
And it's too big to be a kit-bashed B-wing.
Well, it was that in another kit. That's why I said kit.
It's too big. Kit was great on Knight Rider. Now, how about that show? Were you into Knight Rider as a kid there, Bruce?
I did watch it a few times. I wasn't like watching it every week, but yeah, I watched it.
Do-dum, 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 do-dum.
So I always liked it because he had the same name as me.
Do-dum, do-dum, do-dum.
Did you find out that I was right yet?
No, I'm pulling up the ship to look at it right now. I'm actually going to the movie. By the way, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, everybody. Go see it.
If you want to cry.
Oh, it's great, though. It's such a good movie.
Speaking of crying, I have some sad news. It's our last news item. We have a Star Wars actress that recently passed away. It was Margaret Towner. She's the one who played Jira in The Phantom Menace. And if you're like, well, who was Jira in The Phantom Menace? She was the older lady on Tatooine that told Anakin, you know, or get inside, Annie. There's a storm coming. It was that lady. She passed away on April 10th, and she was 96 years old. She lived a good, long life, and she was an actress. She started off very young. She was born in Brazil, and then when she was real little, they moved to England, and she started doing acting, and when she got married and had a family, she took a break from acting for 30 years, and once her kids were grown, she went back into the acting world later in life. And I think it says here, this is from thestage.co.uk. It says here in her obituary that she started back to acting at the age of 67 and her career took off. And probably what she's best known for is Star Wars Episode I, The Phantom Menace.
The actual line is, storm's coming, Annie. I can feel it in my bones. All right. Now, look, I'm looking at this thing. Oh, by the way, rest in peace, 96. Big bucks win. I'm looking at this thing, and I can see where Pablo would spin it like, oh, it's like a B-wing. But it's not. It's too big to be a B-wing. It's too big to be kit-bashed together as a B-wing, from two B-wings. This is lazy production design. Guys, look at this box I built. It looks, well, it's more of a rod than a box. I got a Princess Leia minifig, though. I spent $100 on this. The box of gray bricks.
Actually, I mean, I'm looking at it now. It looks better than I thought.
No.
Yeah, see?
No, it doesn't.
I mean, it's got little wings on it.
No.
Little fins or whatever, and little, you know, laser cannons.
Then put them to use in the movie. Well, Make me like this, but don't sit there and be like, oh, it's a B-Wing kit bashed together. You should like it. No, I don't.
I don't know.
Look at it's terrible. It's terrible.
Michael, do you want to defend that anymore?
No. Steve's entitled to his opinion, even if it's wrong.
But why is he wrong?
Mm-mm. No, let me tell you something. The B-Wing is one of the coolest ships in Star Wars. And to take
it, it's my favorite.
To say I'm going to turn into a box, because let me tell you what makes the B-Wing cool is the way that it's a blade wing, mm-hmm. the way that it would fold down. And this cockpit is like now mounted, like it's an armored B-Wing Mark II cockpit module. Great. Fantastic. Mm-hmm. So happy for you to have an armored B-Wing Mark II cockpit module. How about build a ship that looks cool?
Well, this episode of the Star Wars Report is brought to you by the good folks supporting us over at patreon.com/Star Wars
Geek
Report.
Out loud.
No, Star Wars Report.
Oh. Wow. Wow. Dirty.
You know what? I would say also, please, you know, Steve is desperate right now, so patreon.com/geekoutloud.
Listen, and he's not even making fun. I am desperate right now. Patreon, guys, this is not these. I will say this. I will say podcasts are not easy. They're fun, but there's a lot of work that goes into them. And especially with what these guys do at the Star Wars Report is fantastic. They try to be very professional in everything they do, much more so than what we do in the Golaverse. And so they are worthy of you supporting them. They'll come through with everything that they promise, and we'll only get better. We'll use your Patreon support to get better.
Yes, and if you donate $15, you get to join us on one of our calls where we have our patrons that do $15 or more, and we do a call for about an hour on a weekend and talk to Riley and Mark and me, and still trying to get Bethany to make an appearance. That's going to come at some point, so it's fun. So I say we move on to Boba's Bounty.
It's worth a lot to me. As you wish.
So what has inspired you guys, or have you bought anything this week, or just what is your Star Wars story for this week's? Michael, why don't you start us off with this?
Well, I gotta go first.
Because you're who I chose.
Oh, well, that makes sense. So the only thing that I can think of off the tip top of my head is that I finished the Guardians of the Wills, and I am in the middle of the Rebel Rising book, and I have actually enjoyed both of those quite a bit.
Heard really good things about Guardians of the Wills.
It is really good. The one thing I didn't like about it, and I didn't quite realize it until after, it's sort of hard to read, not because like...
You didn't realize it was hard to read until you were through?
Yeah, well, I was like, man, I'm like, I couldn't figure out like why I couldn't like read it quite like I wanted to, you know, I couldn't.
Because it's at a seventh grade level?
No, no, yeah, and I only read it at a fifth grade level. No,
were you holding the book upside down?
It's all in the design of the book. It's almost like they took, and like you know those like little golden books.
Yes.
And they're like, we're going to do this book format, but for like a 300-page book. And it's, I don't know, it's just, it was a little cumbersome. I wish I would have read it on like an e-reader or something.
See, that's what I did. I read it on your e-reader, so it just seemed like a regular novel. But I've seen the physical book, and yeah, I thought it looked a little weird, that kind of cover. Because we're not used to that reading books like that in that mm-hmm. format.
Yeah, I mean, all the art on it is fantastic. And like I said, the story was a lot of fun. But the actual physical book itself, I wasn't very keen on, which that may seem weird, but I have lots of opinions on the physical book that novels are contained in from time to time. I love what Disney's been doing with their the Disney publishing books, like Rebel Rising is gorgeous. And then like when you take Ahsoka as well, like you take that dust jacket off and it's just this, the artwork wrapping around, and it doesn't have like the actual title on it or anything. It's beautiful.
Cool. Yeah, I read Rebel Rising, but again, that was an ebook, so I have not got to experience taking the dust cover off. But I love the dust cover when it comes off the new Thrawn novel. It's, you know, blue and it's got red writing on the side, like his eyes. I thought that cover, that book, the physical book without the cover, looks really cool too. So Steve, what about you? What's your Boba's bounty for this week?
Oh man, you know, I'm digging seeing people actually find these 40th anniversary Black Series figures, and watching people online as they find them. And I've seen where some people have gotten in their pre-orders from Entertainment Earth for the next wave that has the Sand Person and the Jawa and the Death Squad Commander and all the, you know, that from that original first 12 line. Those look really good, and I wish I could get my hands on them or collect them. I'm having to kind of step away from the whole collecting here right now for time being, but hopefully I'll be back by the time we get a Force Friday for episode 8, the Death of the Jedi or whatever it's called. And the Thrawn, you mentioned the Thrawn novelization. I'm sitting here holding it in my hand, and I agree with you. It's really, really a nice thing to look at. I've got the Celebration exclusive cover with just Thrawn's face taking up the entire front cover of the thing, and it's a really nice book to have.
How did you get that? You weren't at Celebration.
he passed the corn.
I'm just telling you this. I have a lot of good friends who are super nice to me. I've got Sunday, I'll be picking up tomorrow, in fact, at the time of this recording. I'll be picking up from a friend the Last Jedi poster that they gave out at the panel.
Oh my God. Mm-hmm. See, none of my friends were good enough to get me one.
Well, because you were there.
But I couldn't get into the panel.
Yeah, that's.
And
sucks.
I was like, man, I want to do that. And my friends were like, oh, it's so great. Look at this pretty poster. And I'm like, did you get me one? No. And I'm like, thanks, Bruce.
Well, because I didn't know.
It's fine.
I almost didn't get the Princess Leia one because the theater I went in, because I was in one of the overflow rooms, we came out from the top entrance and they were only giving them out at the bottom. So when I came out, it was like, oh, there's no posters. And then the main stage, people were exiting, and that was on the same level that we exited on. And I went over to get a poster, and they said, oh, because you weren't in this room, you can't have a poster. You have to go to your room. So I went back downstairs, and they were already out. And I came back up again to the other, and I begged the guy. And everybody had their poster. This is the Leia one from the 40th anniversary. Everybody had their poster, and their guy just standing there with, you know, a whole stack of them and says, nope, I can't give them to anybody unless they were in this room. I'm like, but everybody's gone. The room's empty. And I told him my situation, and finally he's like, all right, take the poster. I'm like, come on. Really? 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 Okay. So real quick, my Boba's bounty. So my company had a party this week, and they had a karaoke machine there. And our general counsel, he knows that I'm a big Star Wars fan. He comes over to me and he says, I'll give you all the money out of my pocket if you get up to the microphone and you just start like humming Star Wars music for about 3 minutes. And then my boss walks over and she hears this and she says, I will match what he gives you. Well, I'll double it. And I was just like, I don't need to do that or whatever. So, but anyway,
Bruce made 87 cents.
I made $80.
Wow.
I went up there and was going bum 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 and dun, 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 in front of all my coworkers and the CEO of the company and everybody and all that. But at the same time they were loading the karaoke machine for this woman in the legal department and they were starting Bye 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 by NSYNC, so I performed it with her. And so I made $80 from doing that. So that's my Star Wars story for
nice.
This week.
Yeah,
nice.
That's good money. I would have, for $80, I'd have done that too. That's four Black Series.
How long did they tell you you had to be up on stage doing that?
He said 3 minutes, but once I got up there, he put up his fingers as two. He's like, 2 minutes, 2 minutes. But I didn't do the Star Wars stuff for about 2 minutes. It was maybe more like a minute. And then the Bye 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 song came on, but I did that whole song. So I was up there for 5 minutes.
I mean, like, I would have done it. Yeah. I would have been like, oh, you're going to give me a mic, an open mic? Thank you. Like, I don't want to say I would have done it for free, but I almost would have done it for free.
I didn't really do it for the money. I just did it for the fun. And then he went to pay me, and I said, no. And he's like, no, I told you.
You take that money.
I took the money, and I ran.
That's right.
All right. So now we'll move on to the spoiler section. But, Steve, can you stay for that, or do you got to run?
I've got to dip out, fellas. I've hit my limit of time that I'm on here. So I will say this. One of these vehicles in these pictures looks like the Han Solo Hot Wheels car. All right, guys.
Oh, I had something to say on that one too.
Yeah. All right, guys. Well, I've got to dip out. So I will be leaving. Geekoutpodcast.com is where you can find all the things.
Excellent. Well, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Live long and prosper.
Oh, hey, buddy.
You know what? Hell Hydra.
There he goes. Okay, Michael, it's time for spoilers. Are you excited?
No, no spoilers. No.
Do you need to drop out then?
Yep. You do it on your own from here on out. No, it's just pictures.
I know. And yeah, it's just pictures. So, okay. So the Han Solo movie is being filmed. It looks like it's at Hampshire in England at the Folly Power Station. I don't know where. I've never been to the Folly Power Station, but they're filming there under the name Red Cup, which we've heard before. And this is coming from dailyecho.co.uk. Outside of that, we have 23 pictures from the set of this movie. And this is coming from TMZ. And this looks really interesting because we do see some people wearing different clothing and not really as much set, but we definitely see vehicles, which I'm very interested in these pictures. So, okay. So looking at the first row of pictures I have in the notes, I'm seeing Alden Ehrenreich there and can't see everything that he's wearing because some people are in the way, but he's definitely got the Han Solo hair going like he had in A New Hope. And he's got kind of a black shirt on, maybe like a white vest with a black stripe, or maybe that has a zipper, something like that, and black jeans on. Very much right. Like, you know, he's a bit of a rebel, but not in the rebellion sense.
Right, right. Yeah, it's hard to tell. They've got those, you know, cloaks that they put on so you can't see the wardrobe or whatever, but you can see sort of peeking out under it is some sort of a white jacket. It's meh.
Yeah.
It's okay.
It's not like if I saw this picture somewhere just laying around, I'd look at it and go, that's Han Solo, because we're not seeing him in the traditional Han Solo clothing, which I'm glad. Maybe we'll see it later in the movie, but I'm glad he's not just wearing what Han Solo wears all the time.
Right.
I don't know if we need to go through every picture. I mean, we see some people walking around. Almost looks kind of military looking.
It reminds me of like Mad Max is what it sort of reminds me of, a lot of these vehicles. Yeah. But I think once we get all the CGI magic in there, you know, they're going to look a little different. The one Steve was talking about, to me, it looks like a cross between the 66 Batmobile and a book.
Yeah, I can see that for sure. It definitely has that 50s, 60s look in a car. Probably, yeah, mm-hmm. A little more 60s for sure. And then the wheels of it are under it. So I'm assuming that this is like a land speeder, that they'll CGI out the tires because it's under the car like that. It's a blue color. It looks like it would be a 1960s car, but souped
as
up
a book.
As a book and to look like Star Wars with little engines on the back. So I kind of like that they're going with like a retro look. It makes sense since we saw A New Hope and it was taking place, shot in the 70s, that we have a movie that takes place before that. It looks like it's in the 60s.
Yes.
Pretty cool. I do like the vehicle a lot. That's the thing that really stood out to me.
And then we've got the Zamboni right below that. I think that's about it. It's just other shots from around that. You know, I mean, we've got a few people in, like, looks like they've raided their local military store. What do you call those things?
Army-Navy stores.
Army-Navy,
yeah.
Yeah, like that, like, really janky-looking camo. And they just keep showing this book speeder over and over.
The book speeder. Yeah, there's one shot, if you look at row six, there's a guy walking. When I first saw that, it looks like Kylo Ren. See the guy walking?
Yeah.
He's in black, and he's got like a black cloak or whatever, and he's carrying a mask.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
It's not Kylo Ren, though. But
or maybe it is. They're going to bring time travel into this. No, I'm just kidding.
No.
Yeah, I know. That'll ruin a franchise if you have time travel.
Yeah, you can't do time travel. No. Or alternate universes. No, don't do that either. So the next thing we have, the last of the rumors in the spoiler section, is from our rumor friends over at MakingStarWars.net.
Yes, MakingStarWars.Nate, co-host of Star Wars Beyond the Films and Cloud City Casino.
It's getting late. I can't even talk anymore. Yeah, MakingStarWars.Net. Jason Ward wrote something. So he saw something or heard something that in The Last Jedi, Luke Skywalker has a compass. He has a compass that guides his way. And he says the compass is a box with blue marble-like orb on top. And he believes that when Luke moves his hand over the blue orb, the box opens up to reveal the compass inside the box. Boy, there's a lot of boxes on this show. So the box has inside metallic dials with Arabesque writing inside denoting some space version of north, south, east, and west with a needle to point the way. So in addition to that, Luke also has an orange backpack with net on the back and his water bottle in it. Maybe he's going to Star Wars Celebration, because that's usually what I'm carrying.
Right.
And it says here that he sees some kindling inside it for making a fire. Maybe. Not really sure. He says the backpack isn't like the one that Luke has in The Empire Strikes Back. Actually, it reminds him of the X-Wing inspired backpacks you can buy in malls today, if anybody goes to malls. And then Luke Skywalker also has a walking stick and a cattle prod type weapon for zapping any creature that gets in his way. So he said he heard one person refer to it as a lightning rod, but he says it doesn't look like an epic weapon. At least that's what Jason Ward thinks. It doesn't look like a weapon, even though he heard it's a lightning rod. I don't know. I mean, I guess this doesn't really tell us too much, unless it means the fact that he has a compass and a backpack tells me that he's searching. He's traveling. He's not just sitting on this island, because he's been on this island for a long time. I think he knows his way around.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. That's far different from the stuff we were getting for The Force Awakens at that time. You know, we basically had the movie completely mapped out, and now we're like, it looks like he has a orange backpack. You know, like that's about it for spoilers right now.
And he's eating Ritz crackers with peanut butter on them that he packed in this backpack.
Right.
Yeah. Well, one thing he pointed out, that he has yet to see anything or hear anything that Luke has a lightsaber.
Well, yeah. So two things with that. One, just because, like I said, we have so little information anyway, that doesn't mean anything. You know what I'm saying? Like, just because he hasn't heard it doesn't mean that he's not going to have one. It just means that he's not getting a lot of information for this movie. Now, on the flip side of that, though, I have actually thought about it, and it makes a lot of sense if Luke, like Yoda, has moved past using a lightsaber, you know, where he doesn't have one. He's not going to ignite a lightsaber, that he's moved beyond that.
I agree. I like that idea that he doesn't need to use a lightsaber anymore. And so when we see at the end of The Force Awakens, Rey bringing out the lightsaber and going to hand it to him. It's like Luke gives a look at it like, oh gosh, not one of those again.
Right. It's like, ah, oh, that's so like such a noob weapon.
I just cleaned out the place and got rid of every lightsaber I've ever owned, and now you bring me another one. Oh, come
and
on.
I live in a Jedi temple. Do you know how many lightsabers are around here?
Do you know how much it costs me to ship those when I sell them on eBay? It's a lot of money. Come on.
And then eBay takes their cut. I don't make anything.
Right. Especially from where he is. No. I chew. That's where he is.
Thanks. Bless you.
And then the last thing that Jason mentions is that there's a rumor that near the end of the film, Luke is going for Snoke and Rey is going for Kylo. And I think I've heard that before, actually.
I feel like, you know, and not obviously, you know, you can only get what leaks you can get. But I feel like this is kind of non-news. It seems a little more juicy details that, you know, like I said, they were able to get out of The Force Awakens. It just seems like things are definitely on lockdown a lot more now.
Yeah, and I think that's very interesting that we're getting less from this than we did out of The Force Awakens. And I'm surprised we even have these set pictures from Han Solo, because for the longest time, we really weren't seeing or hearing much of anything. So I think they have gotten smarter on the lockdown.
Yep. Yeah, they have their drone interceptors out there working better or something, I suppose.
Yes. Speaking of lockdown, it's time to end the Star Wars report.
Oh, no!
So, thank you, everyone, for joining me and Michael for another episode of Cloud City Casino. And next week, I won't be on, but Nathan P. Butler will be on with Michael. This isn't Cloud City Casino. What am I talking about?
Yeah, falling back into old habits.
Old habits. Old good habits there. Well, thanks, Michael, for joining me. You know, Steve, you know, he left us. You know, how dare he do that? But at least you stuck around for the whole thing.
That's right. I'm not as smart as he is.
So where can people hear your dumb comments online?
Oh, well, you can find them on the Cloud City Casino podcast, which is, you know, on this wonderful network. And then, of course, I have my Twitter page, which is I'm at Morris Isley, and the same for Instagram.
Awesome. And everyone can find me on Twitter at Admiral_Rex. That's Admiral with the little line, Rex. And you can also, I don't even want to say this now. You can also find me on Trek FM.
Boo. No, I'm just kidding.
I do a show there with Dan Gunther called Literary Treks, where we talk about the Star Trek books and comics. And, you know, occasionally I'm also on the 602 Club talking Star Wars. I have to get Star Wars in there. I do that with Matt Rushing sometimes, and we talk sometimes about the comics. You know, seriously, I kind of mentioned it earlier, but the first time I met Steve was just a few weeks ago at Riley and Bethany's commissioning into the Air Force, and Matt just happened to, like, be texting me or whatever, and so I brought him, you know, we connected by video chat. And I held up to Steve, and I said, "This is Matt Rushing." He's like, who? And Matt's talking, but the room was so loud, we couldn't hear him. So all we're doing to Matt is pointing our ears and shaking our heads. We can't hear you.
Oh, poor Matt. Oh.
So maybe one day they'll meet. Oh. But anyway, so we're going to end the show with, like we always say, Matt. I now called you Matt. Now, Michael, guess what?
Yes?
I want you to give your little going away goodbye like you do in Cloud City Casino, and then I'm going to end it with Star Wars Report.
Let the Wookiee win.
Many Bothans died to bring you this podcast.